welcome back to another episode of Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight is Derek Powazik. Did I get that right?
You did. Nice work.
I tried. I practiced it several times, like 2 seconds before I said the whole intro. And Derek heard it the whole time, so I'm sure it was great for him. Derek, tell the people how they might know you.
Well, I have been making websites for about 20 years. Some of the sites I've worked on that you might know are Blogger and Technorati, Back in the Day and Hotwired. But my own sites like Frey.com and Kvetch.com and Cute Fight, Long Live Cute Fight, and other things like that. So I've been kind of active in the web community for about 20 years, and then about 7 months ago, I had maybe a premature midlife crisis and left San Francisco and am now a farmer in Oregon.
And my wife is from Oregon. She loves Oregon.
I love Oregon, too.
I have been to Oregon only once, but I loved it. I went to Portland and where did I go? Cannon Beach.
Oh, gorgeous.
It was beautiful.
I'm so happy to be out of the city and in a more rural spot, mm-hmm. and growing vegetables without any, what were the things in this episode?
Soil reclamators?
Reclamators, yes. I don't need any soil reclamators here.
Well, that's good. And that, the episode, so when I told Derek what his episode was, and he was watching it, he thought, wait a second.
I accused Scott of tilting the machine in my favor.
I did not. This is okay. Just completely random. The episode we're going to talk about in a little bit is, well, you already know because you're listening to this, but Deep Space Nine's episode 24, season 3, Shakar, which is not only a Bajoran heavy episode, but one that features both internal politics and agriculture.
Don't try to get people don't get them too excited. Don't give away the big plot.
So, buckle your seatbelts is what I'm saying, yeah. Because it's a thrill ride.
I was so happy when the randomator spit out a Deep Space Nine episode, and then it was like, oh yeah, I remember this one. Yeah. Anyway,
they're not all great episodes. There are a lot of episodes of Deep Space Nine. Before we talk about this episode and how we perhaps did not enjoy it, let's talk about Star Trek in general. I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it because I am contractually obligated to, which is not true. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would.
And now I thought of a new thing to ask people as a follow-up.
Oh, no, because I had a prepared answer for the next question. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Which is, on a scale of one, which is kind of a passing interest in Star Trek, you know who some of the most famous characters are, that kind of thing, to 10, which is I have dressed up as something and gone to a Star Trek convention. How would you rate yourself on this scale of Star Trek fandom?
Well, I feel like appearing on a Star Trek-related podcast gives me a plus one.
Yes, that's true.
To whatever I was going to say. So I was going to say 6. So let's make it 7.
All right. That's a healthy place to be, I think.
Yeah. I would say that in terms of my fandom, Star Trek appears above Doctor Who, but below Star Wars.
Ah, I see. I would say, obviously, Star Trek is my number one fandom, or else I would not be hosting a podcast right. about Star Trek. That would be a little weird. I think I give people grief in jest for Star Wars fandom, but I do like Star Wars a lot. So I would probably rank mine Star Trek, Star Wars, and then Doctor Who out of those three.
Mm.
Battlestar Galactica, maybe before Doctor Who, the reboot.
The reboot, obviously, yes.
But, yeah, I think those are... I'm trying to think of other popular sci-fi franchises that I could put in. I didn't like Serenity... Not Serenity. What is that called?
Firefly?
Yes, Firefly.
This
not my
call
thing.
Is over.
I know. Everybody loves Firefly. I don't really like Joss Whedon all that much.
Oh,
I'm sorry. It's just a thing. I understand.
Now this is a different. This has taken a turn. I've listened to your podcast from episode zero, and I did not know this about you.
This is the first time I'm admitting this on this podcast. On The Incomparable, I have brought out this this secret of mine, but I don't hate it. It's just not my thing.
Oh, I loved Firefly and Serenity. I'm just and most anything that Whedon has touched. Honestly, I am but that's okay.
You know, I could be wrong. Who knows? I have not watched of Firefly.
You know, I appreciate the way you don't judge people's fandoms on this podcast, so I won't judge yours.
Well, let's get back to happier territory. And so you're a Star Trek fan. You're a solid 7 because you're on this podcast. What would you say, if you had to pick a favorite series, which one would you pick?
Oh, it's definitely Deep Space Nine. But I came to it in a circuitous route, so I'll admit something. This is a safe space, right?
It is. There's no judgment, no judgment-free zone.
So I'll admit that so I'm going to be 42 tomorrow. Actually, I'm 42.
Happy birthday!
Thank you. See, we didn't even mention Hitchhikers. See,
that's true. Oh man, that's okay. Above Star Wars for me. Yeah, so Star Trek, Hitchhikers, Star Wars.
Yeah, it's above Who for me, but might be below Star Trek. In any case, because of 42. Anyway, when I was young, but preteen, Star Trek, the original series, was in constant, reruns, and my mom really liked it. So I think I was predisposed to not liking it.
Sure.
But even as a kid, I remember watching it and thinking, this is stupid. Everything about this is stupid. It's incredibly cheap. Mm-hmm. And even the sexism, I noticed the soft focus on the women and the short skirts. And even as a young kid, I was like, that's not right. Right? Like, and I know it was incredibly progressive for its time, but it's not that time anymore. And I think in hindsight, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. I can't. I really didn't like the original series. I can hear your listeners turning the podcast off at this point.
No, I think a lot of people are in the same boat because I love the original series, but as I'm watching it, I can understand for this podcast why people don't like it. Especially obviously the sexism and all that stuff, clearly. But I mean, it's a 50-year-old TV show, so times have changed dramatically just in like TV production and how stories are told on TV.
Insanely a lot has changed. So I'm just bringing that up so to say the next controversial thing, which is when Next Generation started, I also thought it was stupid because I was predisposed to thinking that from the original series. And I think I watched a bit of the first season, and we all can admit that the first season was a bit rough.
First season was stupid, yes.
And I came back to it in college, and then it was more like, it was college. So it was just like something on in the background of nerdy gatherings, and kind of found an appreciation for it there. But I still really just resisted the whole Star Trek thing because I felt like it was my parents' thing. Mm-hmm. And so when in late college, early San Francisco, I had a group of friends and we all got hugely into Babylon 5. Uh-huh. It was the first sci-fi I had ever seen where the humans didn't know everything, right? The humans weren't the good guys. The different cultures weren't reduced down to a single character trait. And there were ongoing arcing stories that involved war and, big stuff, right? And so I think there was a couple of years there where Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine were on at the same time.
Yes, and I believe that's right.
And that's when Deep Space Nine got really good. And it's almost as if, I don't know that this is the case, but it's almost as if the writers of Deep Space Nine went, hey, how come they get to have, multi-episode arcs? And there was that transition point in Deep Space Nine around the fourth season? Mm-hmm. Is that the Dominion War and all that stuff? where Deep Space Nine just went whole hog. I'm sure that was Ron Moore, you know, getting to strut his stuff and all kinds of stuff going on. But almost like that was where I fell into Star Trek hard. And so I have to say Deep Space Nine is my favorite of all of them. And after that, I went back and watched kind of this other series and went, oh, okay, I see some common DNA in here. And I kind of,
not so bad.
Yeah. And maybe I just got older and stopped being so snobby about my sci-fi.
I will say I have not watched much Babylon 5, but I've been meaning to rectify that situation. But
I think if you like the latter years of Deep Space Nine, you're primely motivated for Babylon 5. Now, I have, gone back and watched it a couple times in the Netflix era, mm-hmm. and it's like, that doesn't hold up. But there's like the season-long arcs and the overall storytelling is still top-notch.
Yeah, I think that I was so used to Star Trek special effects with models and mm-hmm. the ships looking a particular way that when I went to watch Babylon 5 and they were like pioneering CGI ships and all that kind of stuff, which was, groundbreaking stuff, but it just looked so different. And I was like, and then that turned me off to Babylon 5.
And honestly, that's the part that doesn't hold up now. Like, because you look at it and you go, oh, that looks like a PS2 game, right? Like it's it's terrible, but everything going on around it is so rich. And honestly, I love the whole the humans aren't the good guys thing, because I think it was so ingrained from years of other sci-fi storytelling where it was the great Luke Skywalker who goes and fixes everything, right? Like it was always this kind of white man's burden story.
That's true. Although, is Luke Skywalker a human? That was always my question, is are those humans? Because it's a galaxy far, far away.
True.
I'm sure that's somewhere true. There's some kind of Star Trek lore, Star Wars lore that explains that.
Right. That's true. Yeah. And even in Battlestar Galactica, it all happened before and will happen again. So who knows if that, what that means. In any case, I feel like we got way off topic.
No, we're talking about science fiction, and that is good. So Deep Space Nine, as everyone knows, is also my favorite Star Trek series. Not the one I love the most. I do love The Next Generation the most, just because that's where I got my start in Star Trek, really. Mm-hmm. But I think Deep Space Nine, episode for episode, is the best Star Trek that you can find. From a storytelling point of view, if you're looking for the best like special effects and production qualities, obviously that's Enterprise. Not the best stories, perhaps the worst characters are in Enterprise. But people look for different things in different series. And I'm cool with that. It's a beautiful looking series.
It
has some good episodes. And Deep Space Nine has some bad episodes.
Oh yeah.
One of the things that is always an early warning sign for me for a Deep Space Nine episode is if there are any Vedics or Wins or Kais mentioned in the little stinger in the beginning.
Yeah.
And if that happens, then I think, oh boy, this is going to be a rough episode.
Yeah.
Because I don't really like Bajorans, and I really don't like the whole Bajoran religious stuff.
Yeah.
I like Kieran Reese as a character. I think she's a fantastic character.
I do too.
But the Bajorans, just as a race of people, a fictional race of people, I could do without them.
Yeah. So I have here's my thing about the Bajorans. They're space Jews.
That is true.
And so I'm Jewish, so I can say that. And even this episode opens on a yahrzeit candle. So in Judaism, you light this candle to remember the dead. And this episode starts with Kieran Reese in front of a flame, mm-hmm. right? Yes. So the Bajorans were the victims of an occupation, so that obviously makes the Cardassians Nazis, which is a pretty easy parallel. The reason I say this is just like so. My family background is in Poland and was hugely altered by World War II. And I had family who were under occupation and lived in ghettos. So, like, I should be able – like,
You should have a deep understanding and kind of empathy and perhaps a connection to the Bajorans, because it's reflecting that very real struggle. And I understand what the writers were going for, but yeah, does it work, is my question.
No, that's the problem. Like, I'm completely predisposed to have an absolutely illogical emotional connection with the Bajorans. And I, like you, every time I see, oh, God, Bajoran religious stuff, oh, my God, here we go. It's so in that Star Trek way of they want to reference something with a deep meaning behind it, but they don't want to get dirty in it.
Right.
Right. So, you know, all the way to I'm referencing things you've said in past podcasts, but like the Chakotay, like he's quote Native American unquote. Right. Like
he's generic Native American.
Right. So I felt like in Deep Space Nine, they really wanted to give the Bajorans this kind of rich cultural history, which is amazing. In the history of Star Trek, like to let a people be complex and have interests that are not technology and not exploring and not war, right? They're not even in the Federation. They're just this race of people that happen to live near the wormhole and got screwed over by the Cardassians, right? And so they're really caught up in the history of Deep Space Nine. Which is why it's so disappointing whenever they do a Bajoran heavy episode that it's so surface and so, like, there was so much in this episode that if it was part of the, you could imagine a good version of it. Mm-hmm. Like you could imagine the Battlestar Galactica reboot version of it where, like, they're telling war stories and they're talking about religion and it's super important. And this was just like the candy coating of that.
Yeah, and I don't know why that is, because I think that the Bajoran kind of Cardassian relationship is fertile ground for lots of stories that they could tell. And I think the Cardassians make such great villains.
Oh, they're so great. I know, this is my problem, is given the metaphorical connections I just made, like, mm-hmm. I should absolutely root for the Bajorans, right? But the Cardassians are so much better characters.
And they're so much fun to watch, too.
Garak is, like, probably my favorite character in the Star Trek universe.
Oh, man. Garak is a fantastic character. I love Gul Dukat, even though he is crazy and a mass murderer.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel conflicted about myself, but...
He was a great character, and he chewed scenery like no one's business. But did you know that the actor who played Garak, after Deep Space Nine was over, wrote a book that takes place in the Star Trek universe about Garak?
I did not know that.
And I read it. It is the one and only piece of Star Trek fan fiction, essentially, like expanded universe, that I've ever read. And I loved it. It was really good. I'm spacing on the name right now. I'll find it and reference it later. It's like the one Star Trek fanfic book I ever... And it kind of talks about Garak's backstory and what happens after the series ends. It's brilliant. It's really good. I recommend it highly.
And I think why we like Garak and Gul Dukat particularly as two examples of Cardassians, because Cardassians in general, they're cool. They're kind of one note as a race, right? But those two guys have depth.
Right.
They have motivations that maybe we don't understand, but we know they're there, and they follow that along. And that's why I like Kira. She's a Bajoran, and she has depth, and she has conflict, and she is an interesting character. But then you bring all these other Bajorans on, and you pack them in, and they're all, like, one note. Either they are spiritual people who are doing whatever for the prophets and all that stuff, or they are all... I feel like they're in the Bajoran society. There are two things that you can be. You can either be super religious, or you can be a former guerrilla fighter.
Right.
And that's it.
Right. Yeah, and as a former guerrilla fighter, you have to constantly want to go back to fighting because that's all you know.
That's right. That's the only solution.
Yeah.
And you're conflicted because, you know, you want to help the Bajor, but the only tool that you know is guerrilla warfare.
Right. Right. What did they do before the Cardassians showed up? Did they, like... just sit around and be peaceful together?
I think they just sang Kumbaya a lot and grew Morkea and Solemn Grass.
I am so impressed that you remember those two words.
I wrote them down. The only notes I made were Tawali Pie, Botan, Morkea, and Solemn Grass.
Yes. None of which they were actually growing on the farm, that because when Kira shows up, there is nothing growing at the farm.
Well, there's nothing can grow because the Cardassians have poisoned. Cardassians, not good people.
No.
Interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But they have poisoned Bajor, and so nobody can grow anything, which is a problem, I will grant you. Yeah. Perhaps not the greatest nugget for a compelling story of television, but it is a problem that they need to solve.
Yeah.
And yeah, the basic thrust of this episode is, what's her name? Ka Vedic. Is she a Vedic in this? Vedic Wynn, who I like as an actress, because Vedic Wynn, I'm noticing a trend here. I like crazy characters. Vedic Wynn is crazy.
Well, they played that out over the length of the series. You never quite knew if she was a truly spiritual person with terrible social skills.
Right.
My child. Or if she was a megalomaniac, power broker, you know, crazy person, right?
Yes, I always think that she's a crazy person, but she could just be a true believer.
Right, and I think they actually teased that out really effectively and then probably for too long, and towards the end of the series they answered it definitively. Mm-hmm. But this is still in the early stages where it's like, she's rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, but I like that about her.
Oh, me too.
Because she's on the edge. You're like, I don't know if she is. Does she really believe what she's saying? It's kind of like, you know, all the politicians have to be, you know, God-fearing, and they have to talk about how they go to church every Sunday. And, you know, I'm sure a large percentage of them do and are true believers. But you know, just by law of averages, some of them are lying about it.
And it's television logic, where any character who comes on and says, I am A, they are actually B, right? Like, that's just, it's exactly. Only a matter of time before the other shoe drops. So anyone who's loudly proclaiming their religiosity or, selflessness is actually not religious, very selfish.
And Kira doesn't like her.
Yeah, and one of the things I love about Kira is you can just see the kind of loathing on her face.
Yeah, she doesn't have a poker face.
Yeah, she plays loathing really well, like seething contempt. Really well.
Which is good. And it's good. That's why I like them in scenes together, because she clearly just hates Vedic Wynn. And Vedic Wynn, the actress who played her, who also played Nurse Ratched, fun fact, is great at just kind of having this kind of slightly blank look about her that, you know, truly devout people, like devotion is flowing from her face. Mm-hmm. But you don't know. It looks like it's too much. So you think she must not be really devoted, or she's super devoted. You can't tell, but she does that very well.
She and Kira are great together.
Yeah, but the rest of this episode is like, oh, let's talk about internal politics and farming equipment.
Like the Terra. It's the Trade Federation.
Yes, it's not good. Yeah.
I really love the thing, and I was bored by talking about farming. So that shows you something.
That is true, yes. And I'll quickly synopsize the setup. Vedic Wynn, she's no longer Kai. She's been elevated to the spiritual leader of Bajor. But now, in a stunning twist, the first secretary or whoever the heck is in charge of the government is dead. And Vedic Wynn is also now, she's like Pope and President, basically, of Bajor.
That's what I wrote in my notes. The Kai is like the Pope, right? So the Pope can hold political office, but I guess you can.
I guess so. In Bajor, you can, because they're very spiritual people, I guess. And so she's consolidated her power, and she wants to. So she's kind of like interim president and full-time Pope until the next election. But Kira is upset because nobody's going to run against Vedic Wynn, because everybody on Bajor thinks that Vedic Wynn is the one who negotiated the treaty with the Cardassians, when in fact we know that it's what's-her-face, the guy that Kira's in love with, who's dead.
Burrell.
Yes. So yes. He's dead.
And have you covered that episode on the podcast yet?
I don't know if we got that
one. Okay. Because I actually went back and watched that after this one to be like, who was Burrell again? I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
That dude.
So Burrell gives his life to secure the the peace deal, and Kai Winn took all the credit for it, basically.
Yes. And in a scene where, in a great scene, one of the few great scenes, I think, in this episode, Kira confronts Kai, or Vedic Winn, or whatever the hell her title is, about that. And she's like, oh, child, my child, Burrell never wanted glory. He just did what was good for Bajor.
Which is totally true.
It is totally like, true.
Like, oh, that's how you get to be that level of politician, is you can just make your selfishness look like selflessness.
Exactly. And that's why she's so successful.
And by the way, the don't try this at home drinking game is every time she says my child, drink, which would lead to a lot of drunkenness very early in the episode.
Yes, she says she calls everybody her child. She has a lot of children.
But specifically Kira, like she really hits Kira with that.
She does, and Kira, not a fan of being called my child, certainly not by Kai Winn.
Oh my God, so condescending.
Yes, and so Kai obviously has turned to Kira to help negotiate. So basically, the thing is, there's this very potentially fertile region, province, on Bajor, that its soil is all messed up. And the Bajoran...
Because of the Cardassians.
The Bajoran Agricultural Ministry has created these soil reclamators, but apparently they only can make two or something. I don't know. I don't understand this, because this is... Well, Bajor... And also, this is another question I have. Bajor is not a member of the Federation.
Right.
But that makes me think, what benefits do you get for being a member of the Federation? Because the Federation is a post-scarcity society, right? So they
right.
have unlimited energy, and they can turn energy into matter. So they have unlimited goods. So they could easily make as many soil reclamators as Bajor needs.
Right. I guess... If they were part of the Federation, they'd be lousy with soil reclamators.
Everybody would have one.
Right. They'd be driving them in the street. But because they're not, they're scarce.
They're scarce. So they have to make them themselves using their, you know, they're an agrarian society in general, I get the feeling. And so maybe Bajoran engineers aren't the greatest engineers in the world.
Right.
Well, I guess they're the greatest engineers in the Bajoran world, but in the universe. They don't have a Chief O'Brien down there who can,
no.
or a Scotty who can just throw it together and fix it.
Right. So the plot, the like hand wavy plot is, you need to go get the soil reclamators out of this one place because they need to be in this other place.
Yes.
It was very thin.
It is very thin. But the point is because this other place can produce lots of stuff, but we promised it to these small farmers. I guess it's kind of like a test. The previous president had said they can keep it for a year. But
right.
now Kai Winn is like, well, we don't want to do that. We want to move him over here so we can start exporting food.
And I can't go ask him for reasons
that are unclear.
So, yeah, so I'm going to send you because he was your commander in the rebellion. Is that right?
They were in the same cell, maybe?
Cell, yeah. But he was the leader. It felt like he was the leader, but maybe I'm just...
He may have been the leader.
Yeah.
I don't even remember his name, which is not good. What is his name? Let's see. Memory Alpha. Oh, Shakar is the name of the episode. In fact, is his name.
Yes.
That makes sense. So yeah, just go to Shakar and convince him to give the soil reclamators back. So she goes there. She's like, oh, great. I could visit my friend. I could go to Bajor, visit some people that I know from when we used to kill Cardassians together, relive good old times, maybe have some Tawali pie, and fix this for Kai Winn, even though I don't like Kai Winn, but I'm still a loyal Bajoran, and I want to do what's best for Bajor. And I think this is probably the best.
I got the sense when she decided to go, it was like, I'm going to go check out Wynn's story with my friend Shakar. Like, I got the sense like she wasn't really doing her bidding. She was just going to kind of go
try. See what's what.
She was going to follow the story. She was, yeah.
And not exactly refuse Kai Winn, but
right.
Not be her errand woman either.
Yeah, you could tell her loyalties were clearly divided.
Yes. And all the while this is happening, this episode does have a B-plot that is
this B-plot.
So weird that I don't know why they included it. But it involves Chief O'Brien being on a streak, or in the zone. In the zone, he says that like 18 million times.
Yep.
With darts. And so everybody's in quarks playing darts. And...
which is this, space darts are the same as normal darts, but there's LEDs in the board.
Yes.
When you do something.
It is so bizarre. And so the entire B plot I will just deal with now. O'Brien is really good at darts. He's on a winning streak. He beats Sisko. Sisko gets called away and is angry. Quark notices, starts taking bets. O'Brien beats Dax. And Dax is, it seems like it's like her first time playing darts, so it doesn't seem like a great victory for O'Brien.
It was her walk-on for the
exactly episode. She needed to do something.
Yeah.
And then the big confrontation is out of nowhere, some random Vulcan who apparently is a dart enthusiast shows up.
They made him Vulcan because it would just be that more aggravating to lose to someone that kind of the Vulcan-y, gloaty by not being gloaty way.
Mm-hmm. And so the Vulcan has bet, I suppose, O'Brien that he can win. And O'Brien is like, okay, I'll take the bet because I'm in the zone, man. I'm in the zone.
And Quark keeps like being sneaky to keep O'Brien playing because I guess he's mm-hmm. making money on the back end.
Yes, whatever. And O'Brien just wants to go kayaking in the holosuite, but Quark is like, no, you got to keep with your keep in the zone, keep playing darts. So the big climactic scene for the B story is the dart game between this random Vulcan mm-hmm. and O'Brien, and during which Quark hands O'Brien a mug of something. And O'Brien's rotator cuff gets
ripped, torn,
or something.
Rotator cuff, in the least convincing way possible, picking up a mug.
Yep, and he has to, you know, forfeit basically because he can't complete the game, and he gets a new shoulder, and he goes kayaking.
Yeah. And the whole time I watch this plot, I'm like, okay, the shoe that's going to drop here is that he and Bashir planned this fake accident mm-hmm. so that he could get out of darts. And I feel like it was written that way, and then they just took out the last part.
Yeah, I think they must have had time constraints with this episode, because I was reading on Memory Alpha as well that they, in the original script, they kind of built up, like they explained where this Vulcan came from, because it's just like a weird, random, suddenly he's a Vulcan. I mean, he's not suddenly a Vulcan. Suddenly there is a Vulcan.
Right. Yeah, and like you, all it would take is like 10 seconds of O'Brien and Bashir walking away from Quark's and kind of going, ha ha, winky winky, or whatever. And then you would have, ah, oh, they were playing Quark. But instead, it just seems like they're both bad actors.
Yes. It's an odd. I would have cut the entire B plot from this episode.
Yeah.
And even though I don't think the A plot is all that great, put some more effort into that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I am a simple podcast host. I am not a TV writer, so I don't know what happens in the writing room. So, anyway, Kira...
Back to the A-plot.
Yes, back to the A-plot. Kira, while they're playing darts in Deep Space Nine and lording over with their post-scarcity society, mm-hmm. Kira's on the ground, poisoned by Cardassians, visiting her former resistance cell members who, you know, Shakar lives in one thing, and then two other of her friends live nearby, and they're also farmers. And everybody's farming dirt because the soil's no good. And I guess there was probably like some kind of Bajoran homestead act, is what I'm gathering, so people could get a plot of land and then kind of stake their claim and start farming to bring back Bajor.
These three farmers are sitting around talking about how hard they're working, but every time they cut to the exterior shot, it's a yard of dirt. So... it's like, are all the plants somewhere else? Like,
they're in the hydroponics bay. They don't actually grow plants in dirt. God.
I mean, I feel like this whole plot would have been so much more, like the audience would have understood it if they had shown a field of dying crops, right? Or yes. If they had shown this soil reclamator working and shown
We like, never see why. A soil reclamator.
We never see one. They just talk about it. I feel like in the Next Generation they would have spent the CG money, right, to have some shot of the soil reclamator mm-hmm. fixing the soil and plants coming up, and then the audience would go, oh, this, right, now I understand. Mm-hmm. And instead, the Deep Space Nine spent the CG budget on a couple of laser blasts later.
Yes. Ineffectual laser blasts.
Oh my god. Yeah, poorly aimed.
It's not good. So Kira is like, okay, the farmers are like, no, we don't want to give back the reclamators, but we'll think about it. And so Kira goes back to Wynn and she says, well, they're going to think about it, but I really think you should let them have it. And Wynn is like, no. And she suddenly goes from this is a small internal affair to let me get the militia and I'm going to kill them or get the reclamator back, whatever happens.
Yeah, she sent the fuzz.
Yes, she ratchets it up the conflict very quickly. She goes from trying to negotiate for maybe half an hour to sending in the army very quickly.
Yeah. Men with guns will fix this.
That's right. This is all they understand.
Yeah.
And then Wynn has Sisko come down and she's like, oh, emissary, you really have to help us. I need these reclamators. And so you need to send down Federation security forces so that I can get them back. And Sisko's basically like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
And she says, well, you really need to. And he says, well, technically, you're not a member of the Federation, so it's actually illegal for me to do that. So I'm not going to do that. And she's like, oh. And she says, well, maybe we won't want to be part of the Federation anymore. How do you like that?
And he's like, okay.
He's like, well, that seems kind of rash over some soil reclamators. If you were part of the Federation, there would be like soil reclamators everywhere. But
right. And it's so weird, too, how almost everyone in this episode is going, gosh, this seems like a big overreaction, which makes you as the audience kind of go, yeah, it does. Why are you? What? Like, what's the bigger play here? And I guess maybe there is one in a back channel somewhere, but the audience never figures it out.
No, I think they tried to explain. So the thing, so this is where we get the question of, is Wynn crazy or super devout? Because she says, I feel like the prophets are testing me. And the only way I can prove that I am faithful to them is by destroying all opposition any way I can.
Right.
Because that's what the prophets are all about.
Pretty strong indication on the crazy side of the...
Yes.
Spectrum.
So that seems to be her deal. So she sends through, there's lots more talk about soil reclamators. Then they send in the militia. So Kira goes back to the farm. She warns Shikar. Shikar's like, well, we've got to fight. And Kira's like, well, maybe we shouldn't. And then he says, well, yeah, we should. And then Kira says, well, we should, totally should. She's totally convinced. Very quickly. They go back to their roots. They start hiding from the militia. There's lots of scenes of them setting up like decoy sensors and running and up and down hills.
Yeah, walking on the ridges of Southern California.
Mm-hmm. And then so it all leads up to this climactic scene in which there's a bunch of militia people walking in a valley. The farmers.
Odo.
And is Odo there?
Odo's not there. They're all dressed like Odo.
Oh, they are dressed like Odo. Because Odo's dressed like a Bajoran.
But specifically a Bajoran security officer.
Yes.
That was kind of an aha moment for me that I hadn't noticed in this episode before. I was like, hey, oh, that's a uniform. I thought it was just Odo.
A style choice.
Style, right. But it's like, oh, okay, that's like their cop uniform, basically.
So the cops are looking for them. They're surrounded. So clearly the rebels, I guess, at this point, have the upper hand and could slaughter the militia. And they're about to.
They've got the high ground.
They've got their phaser rifles or whatever they have. Shikar, I was going to call him Shakira. Shikar and Kira give each other the look that says we should, take these guys out. They get up. They look through their scopes. They recognize the leader as another one of the well-known resistance fighters.
Right. And that someone they fought with.
Mm-hmm. And then they think, well, maybe we shouldn't kill all these Bajorans. When we're Bajorans, because that will make us no better than Cardassians, basically.
Right. So, there's the one moment where Kira starts to goes to fire and then can't do it, and looks at Shikar, and he says, oh, I can't do it either. And it was like, okay, let's
go talk to them.
Let's give up, yeah.
So they all decide that they're reasonable people. They should go to Kai Wynn and say, we're reasonable people. Maybe we don't need to kill each other over these stupid soil reclamators. So they do that. She's totally like, no... I see you brought me some presents, is what he says. She says. And he's like, well, no. I'm here so we can discuss this as adults. What gives, Kai Wynn, can't we be reasonable? And she's like, no. give me the soil reclamators, which is a hard word to say. Which,
and at this point, the audience still has never seen.
No, we do not know what they look like.
Right.
And then our good friend Leonis Holum says, well, not so much. Shakar reveals that he did not come to surrender, but in fact he came because he's running for president too against Kai Winn. And Kira says, you better drop out of the race, because if you don't, then we'll tell everybody that you tried to kill these farmers. And she says, oh no, hey, military guy, you're with me. And he's like, no, actually, I talked to all the military people, and they really like Shakar.
Yeah.
So we don't like you. And she's like, oh, this is a coup then. Which it kind of is. And then Kira's like, no, this is an election. He's going to run and win fair and square, even though we don't want you to run. And if you do run, we will tell everybody about it. So
yeah, it's like a very light.
It's a coup light. So Derek, I think I may know the answer to this question, but what did you think of this episode?
I had to work to come up with a list of things I liked this episode.
What is on that list?
I like that it gave some depth to Kira.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it was mostly not people in Star Trek uniforms, right? There were very few Federation uniforms. And intellectually, it was an interesting episode because it fleshed out this little corner of the galaxy that didn't have anything to do with, you know, spaceships or laser beams spaceships or starships and things like that. So it could have been a very interesting episode.
I agree. It could have been.
Ron Moore was working on Deep Space Nine at this point, wasn't he?
Yes.
So I feel like he was beta testing a lot of really interesting ideas that would come to fruition in the Battlestar Galactica reboot that he would do in 20 years, or 15 years from this point. Because it made me think of those scenes in BSG where it was like a bunch of people sitting around a table drinking and telling war stories, right? Like, there were a lot of those in that, and they were captivating. And so this, with Kira with her rebellion buddies, right, who have become farmers now, like, talking about the good old days and talking about what they're doing now, like, there was so much grit and interesting potential in that went unrealized in this episode. But you could kind of imagine the Battlestar version of it and go, oh, yeah, that would be amazing. Like, these are freedom fighters after the war has ended. Like, and there's this now rearing the head, this new Kai that they don't like, who wants something from them that they don't want to get. Like, there's really fertile, dramatic ingredients in this, and it just unfortunately was nowhere in the episode.
Right, and then that gets us to that interesting idea of, you know, what does a freedom fighter do when you've got your freedom?
Right.
And how do you, like I said before, like, it seems there are only two choices for Bajorans. You're either a priest or a soldier. When your world no longer needs soldiers, what do you do?
Right.
Well, we have come to the end, I believe, of our episode. So, Derek, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure.
Next on Random Trek, Voyagers Inside Man.